Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Troy and Michael Speak, a show dedicated to exploring the tools you can use for understanding, nurturing, and building your personal universe. The channeling and the teachings shared here are based in what is known as the Michael Teachings, as taught by the entity we've come to refer to as Michael, as channeled through various channels from around the world, so that we can cross-reference and validate the information as we collect it. For more information and a basic introduction to teachings, please see truthloveenergy.com. I'm Troy, your host and resident Michael Channel, and on today's show, in the spirit of Christmas, in the spirit of the holidays, we're going to cover connecting to spirit. Get it? Spirit of Christmas? Spirit of the holidays? Okay. You and the other world. We'll discuss our experiences of channeling, our connection to our guides, and our contact with the other side in general. If you would like to call during the show, please have your fingers ready to dial. The number is 646-652-4762. That's 646-652-4762. And we'll be bringing guests onto the air about 40 minutes into the show. So if you get through before that, just hang in there, listen through your phone, and mute your speakers on your computer. We'll also take questions from the chat room provided by Blog Talk Radio just below the stream for this show. On today's panel, we have as guests Sandy, Cypress, and the wonderful Karen.
Yay!
So everybody sit back, take a deep breath, and assume your connection to spirit, and enjoy the show.
Well, hello everybody. This is our second live show. What the hell? I thought the music was over. This is our second live show, and I'm very nervous and excited again, as usual, and it doesn't get any less with the experience. I don't know why. But today we're going to talk about connecting with spirit, you and the other worlds, and it's not going to be so much a show about how to do it as much as it is sharing our experiences. Once we get a better hang of the show and feel more comfortable, I think it'll be easier to go into more instructional sessions. But until then, we'll just be pretty much sharing our experiences and talking and keeping to the topic. So I apologize if you were expecting to have a how-to, and maybe there will be some of that, a little bit. But I thought I'd start off the show with a little bit about my experiences in channeling, since I've been doing it for about 20 years professionally, but I also had my own experiences that led up to my choice to go in this direction from early on in my life. And I just remember, it's just like, it's not like TV makes it out to be. It's not like that movie Sixth Sense where you're walking around looking at, you know, scarred and mutilated dead people poking their heads out of walls and stuff. And I know some channels say that that's been their experience, but it wasn't mine. Mine was just more either very friendly experiences or just glimpses or just seeing presences. Sometimes they were blurry and sometimes they were clear, but they were never... They weren't terrifying like they make it on TV, or they weren't so overwhelming like some mediums or channels have expressed. At least my experience wasn't like that. But I would see what I guess I would call the dead, and so I really kind of, at first I had conversations like regularly, and then after I realized it wasn't normal that I stopped doing it, and I started tuning it out, and would just sort of pay attention to them the same way I would strangers on the street. You know, if you see a stranger on the street, you don't talk to them. So it was the same way that I started dealing with, you know, these presences. And then occasionally there would be some that would be a little bit more obvious, just the same way a stranger is. Sometimes they come up and ask you for directions, or sometimes they come up and, you know, have something to say. But for the most part, I pretty much kept my distance until – till my grandmother died, and I wasn't very close to her, but for some reason, after she died, I started having contact with her way more than I did when she was alive. And I don't, a lot of it was in the dream state, and the visits seemed to be focused on teaching me something. And I don't even remember exactly the experiences that I had, but I know I would wake up feeling like I had been learning something. And then from that point on, my sense of the other side, or whatever you want to call it, seemed to be enhanced and expanded and more, I don't know, more tangible. And so I don't waste all the time telling my story. I'll just try to keep it brief, which is almost impossible for me, but I will do my best. But it became more tangible in the sense that, for instance, I had a visit to, I don't know, somebody just was crouching in the corner of my bedroom when I was living in Arizona, and I was dating somebody at the time who was very skeptical, and so I said, okay, let me just talk to this one that's here and ask questions, and we'll see if we can find something we can validate the information. So I had my little conversation with this man who had apparently died and was just depressed. It was just this presence hanging out in the corner of the room, just holding his head and very sad. And I can't remember the details now, but he told me his name. He told me that he had died and just was confused about where to go. And he just had a conversation with me until he felt better, and then he left. And I told my boyfriend at the time about it and gave him details. And within a day, I think it was a day or two, the details of that presence was in the paper as an obituary. And all the stuff that had come through was there. So it was very exciting to find that validation, even though it's not something that I really use all the time. And I don't channel the dead like that. I just channel Michael. So that's my next thing, as I wanted to tell you, is that over the years, as I've progressed in my, I don't know, my relationship with channeling Michael, I've tuned out even once again more and more the other side. And I don't really pay attention to it much, except for my own personal guides. But working with Michael seems to be fine, and trying to connect to my own essence seems to be a priority to me. But I'll tell you really quickly, some of you have heard the story 1,000 times, but I'm going to tell you how I met Michael really briefly, that I had been working with my guide and keeping a journal for about 2 years, and over that period of time there was lots of information that I could have looked up and validate, but I was scared to death to do it because I was afraid that if I looked it up and none of it was true, such as historical dates or geographical locations and, I don't know, events that happened that could be validated, I was scared to death to look it up, because if it wasn't there, it would mean I was crazy. And if it was there, it would mean something really truly was happening, and that was just as scary to me at the time, even though I'd been experiencing it for a long time. But I kept those journals, and at one point my guide said I would be opening up to a larger source of information and that he would be leaving. And I just say he for convenience. You know, when you're in spirit, you don't really have genitals, so not a boy or a girl, but I called him he. And I only called him guide, too, because I didn't want to have a real New Agey reference for my spirit guide. So I just called him guide. But I did spell it with a Y, so there was a little twist on there. So I didn't know what that meant, that I would be opening up to a larger source of information. But I just kept it there as a note in my journal. And he said he would be leaving, so I didn't quite understand what that meant either. At the time, I kind of just took it in stride. But that day, that week, I was with my friend Michelle, and we got on the Ouija board and asked some questions. I don't know what they were, but at one point, the answer prompted me to sort of comment and say to my friend, well, I guess we just have to have faith. And when we went back on the Ouija board after that, it spelled out, faith is a lie. It's blind acceptance in things you don't know to be true. And we just stopped connecting right then and there because we had been taught that faith was such this, you know, important word that we should, you know, have respect for, and that faith was a good thing. And so for this Ouija board to be suddenly saying faith is a lie, I was convinced we had connected to something really dark and just evil. And so we stopped right then. I was like, oh, my God, faith is a lie. What would say that? So that very week, I was in an old bookstore, and I was looking for just metaphysical books in general. I think back then they were called the occult. Remember those days? And I reached for a book, and my sleeve hooked on a book lower on the shelf, and it pulled it off the shelf, and it was flipping through the air, and I caught it, and my hand karate chopped it open, and I thought, ooh, this looks interesting. And the first thing I saw as a quote in the book was, faith is silly. And it went on to explain how faith was, you know, basically blind acceptance, and why shouldn't we question? And I was floored because that was exactly the message we had received earlier. And I looked at the cover of the book, and it was called Messages from Michael. And all of a sudden, it just washed over me. I didn't even have any details about the book at that time, but I just thought, oh, my God, is this who I'm supposed to contact? Is this who I'm opening up to? And then I took the book home. I bought the book, and I took it home, and I started flipping through it, and there was all this terminology about sages and warriors and old souls and young souls, and I looked back through my journals, and over the two-year period of time, I had been receiving all of this information about warriors and priests and sages, and I thought this whole time that it was all literal. So when someone was channeled as being, you know, a priest, I thought, oh, they were a priest in a past life, that they were literally a priest. And I had, and then there was seventh level and sixth level, all these terminology that's core to the Michael teachings was there, and I thought it had to do with numerology and old souls and young souls. I didn't know what, I had a completely different idea about what those things were. And once I saw the context for all of this, I was able to look back over those journals and find that I had been being prepped for about 2 years for contact with Michael, and I was very shocked and surprised by it all. And I found that there were people who were available who were channeling Michael, and I scheduled a session with the wonderful, wonderful Holly Coleman. And about halfway through the session, and by the way, when I got that session with Holly, I was poor and I didn't have my own phone, so I was calling using, I think, a calling card, and I was calling from a payphone outside. So here I am standing at a payphone outside talking to Michael through Holly. And about halfway through, and I had been anticipating, I didn't want to mislead or, I mean, I didn't want to bias her channeling or affect her in any way, but at one point during the channeling, Michael had said, well, we've been waiting for you to remember our agreements, and you have agreements to channel us and work with us and get material out based on your work with us. And I was just very, from that point on, I was very, scared and excited and just the whole thing. And so it took a while for me to feel comfortable channeling, but I did. I worked on it. And at first when I started channeling, when I was actually actively trying to bring these consciousnesses, particularly Michael's, into my body for communication, I would freak out. My body would start shaking. I would be sweating. My heart would race. And I found that the problem was, based on what Michael said through Holly in follow-up sessions, that I had, in a past life, been a little bit reckless in my connection with the other side, and I was being very experimental, and apparently I had let these, you know, infant souls who don't like being in between lives jump in and out of my body all the time, and people around me just thought I was a lunatic. And at one point, I guess it became so bad that I was put out of my misery. I was killed because they thought I was just too insane. So apparently in this life, when I started to channel, my instinctive center, which is something that you carry over from lifetime to lifetime, it would react and think going into a trance equals death. So I had to relearn how to feel safe going into a trance. And eventually I did, with a lot of instruction from Holly and Michael themselves and some spiritual teachers that some of you might recognize as Oren and Dabin. They were very, very helpful. And that's my story about how I got into channeling. And there's a lot more to it than that. But like I said, I was trying to be brief. Too late. So let me bring on the panel, because we have a lot to cover today. And even though we're talking about channeling and connecting to spirit, we're also going to be talking kind of with a paranormal bent, too. So we may be talking about hauntings and just the whole like. So if you have any questions about that, make sure you put it up in the chat room or give us a call during the caller segment. So let me bring them on now.
Gee, all that music, it sounded like you were bringing us in from outer space.
Well, I pretty much am.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Well, thank you guys for being a part of the show today, and let me introduce you, and you guys introduce yourselves as well by telling your name and your role and your entity number. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with all this terminology, just go to truthloveenergy.com and look at the basic intro. So who would like to go first?
Well, my name is Cypress, and I'm a Sage Cast Sage from Cadre 1 Entity 2.
I'm Sandy Stevens. I'm a Scholar Cast Sage from Cadre 2 Entity 2.
And I'm Karen Ouellette. I'm the Unsage.
Yes, finally.
Somebody has to.
I know.
I'm a Warrior Cast. Warrior Cast King from Cadre 1 Entity 5.
See, we by osmosis turn everybody into sages around us.
That's right.
Around you.
That's why you accidentally said that. Yeah, and just to be clear, this is not Karen Murphy. This is Karen Ouellette.
I'm not a channel.
She is not a channel, but she does have some connections to the other sides, I'm sure.
Of course. And if you hear two little beeps, my phone battery is dying. Should anything happen, I'll just call back on my cell.
Oh, is that what
your little beeps are if you hear them?
I do.
Oh, just now I was looking at my phone thinking, what's going on with it?
Me too. I did the same thing. Okay, so if you do just get disconnected, just call back.
Yeah, just let me know what that is.
So you guys heard my little story, and I'm sure you guys have heard it 1,000 times.
That is true.
But I thought I'd include it in there. So let's start off with our discussion about the other side and just start off asking, have you had any direct contact with what you would consider a spirit or an entity outside of accessing through a medium or through a channel? And if you have, tell your little story.
Well, I have briefly when Troy and I were staying at my friend Jody's house in Wisconsin, which was like the late 90s, 97, 98. We had a lot of time on our hands back in those days, and I decided that I was going to try to just sit and see if anything happened, you know. And I was in contact with, I'm not even sure what it was, and I don't even remember if we asked Michael, which seems odd, but it was either entity or a grouping. It was definitely more than one person. It was, but they had the name Miranda, or that's the name they gave me anyway. And I never actually said anything verbally or anything like that, but I did just have like personal contact, like which I could talk about later when it was over. But for me, it was a little bit overwhelming, to say the very least. But it looked, I guess maybe I visualized it, which was probably my perception as opposed to anything real. I'm not really sure. but it looked like a giant group of people, sort of like those Verizon commercials, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But it was just sort of in a point, like, and there was one person, which was looked like a girl, sort of, standing in the front. And it was like, I guess she was like the one who talked for them or something. I don't even know if that's exactly correct, but that was my perception. And they, you know, I had conversation and everything with them, and it was very inspiring, much more towards the inspirational than the informative, I think. And who knows, maybe it was just something that I needed at that time, you know, but that was the only contact I've personally ever had. It was kind of fun. I think about it a lot, and I think, oh, I should do that again, but I didn't have it.
Well, was I part of that? Because I barely remember that. I remember the name Miranda for some reason.
Yeah, you were. Well, I mean, you didn't do anything. I mean, I talked to you about it and stuff, and you were very encouraging, as always. But it was very short-lived. I think our lives took a dramatic turn. We moved to Raleigh, and then, you know, you caught up in life, and I really hadn't done it again. But it was, like I said, at the time, I think it was more of an inspirational-type connection than it was anything else, you know, that whole cheerleader, you can do it kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll talk about that, too, about the different kinds of connections there can be. But do either of the other of you have a short story to share?
Karen?
I was waiting for Sandy. You know, I always let the sages go first. actually, no. I need, you know, I'm a solid role with intellectual centering, and I need an intermediary. I usually need a channel or something, someone to go in between. I wish I could say I saw my guides, know my guides, heard them, nothing, zero zip.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're there. I've heard about them, but I can't hear them, see them. Don't come to me in dreams. It's just, you know, this is something I have to ask Michael one of these days, you know, about, you know, intellectual centering in a solid role and what was I thinking?
Too solid for your own good, right?
I don't know.
Well, there's still an effect, though, in place, I'm sure.
Oh, I know. I 100% I get all kinds of unbelievable information, but it gets very frustrating that I can't sense them or feel them or talk to them or.
Well, I think that goes into. And I don't want to get too far off track, but I think that this, it's like anything else. It's like piano playing. It's like, I would love to be able to play the piano, but I know that it's not, I mean, and I could if I tried, and I could practice, but it's just not my focus in this lifetime. So it's not that I couldn't, it's just you have other things to do, and it's just, I don't know if that's just a priority for you in this lifetime. Especially being a king, you know, you've got your people to do it for you.
I suppose.
Yeah, maybe that's
something else to delegate.
Yeah, it's, you know, you've got it set up so that you have your access, but it's, you know, you're just not playing the piano this life.
Well, I kind of am, but so it's kind of like, we do feel like I've sort of tied an arm behind my back, but I don't want to go off track, so, you know, we'll just keep going with the conversation on this one.
So you're saying you're trying to. That is a priority for you.
Well, it's something that I, you know, it would be helpful.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, maybe we can help in the course of this show or another one. Sandy?
No, I haven't really, unless you count dreams. I've had a few dreams that I'm pretty sure were contacts of some sort, but I've never had anything conscious, and I've tried hard. I've always wanted to do that, and I just haven't succeeded as yet.
Yeah, I do count dreams. I think that's important to include those as part of the realm or the medium for connection to not only our essence, but other spirits and other dimensions and even parts of ourselves that we might even block out because, you know, even though we're talking about you and your other world, so it's not just about spirit. It's also about, you know, facets of yourself that you might have blocked and, you know, sub-personalities. We're not going to go all over the place today, but, you know, in dreams you do access a lot. So I think...
Yeah, there's been things that have been obviously been messages in dreams, but they're always obvious in retrospect.
Yeah.
When I'm looking back later, you know, something might happen to me 2 or 3 weeks later. And when it happens, it's like, that's what that dream was about. Jeez. And I'm not good at getting the signal straight.
I think it's really one of the harder things is kind of to learn the way that you perceive information, the way it comes to you, because it doesn't come, it comes abstract. It doesn't come just like always in the sentence form that you would like with a clear direction.
Yeah.
And you, it's like you have to, through over time, when you look back and you see, well, that's what that meant, you should maybe take a little bit of time to think about how you process and connect those little dots together. So the next time it happens, you start to form your own vocabulary.
Well, yeah, you start to learn your own vocabulary.
Yeah, you learn how your dreams speak or how your connection with essence or anything. Mm-hmm. Quite often it's more abstract and you have to learn to... Michael had told us once that the information is never incorrect, just your perceptions of it.
Or your interpretations of it.
Or interpretations of it. So, you know, you have to, I think, learn how you communicate from that aspect.
You know, I think that that's absolutely right, and I've noticed that in other areas as well. You know, when I've had flashes of things that I didn't recognize, even awake, but after the fact thought, you know, I was supposed to have been getting a message there, and I'm just not good at seeing symbolism for some reason.
Seeing it or interpreting it?
Interpreting it. I see things, but if it's not real clear, I just don't get the connection. In normal, non-metaphysical life, it's one of the reasons I don't enjoy poetry much is because I just don't catch on to symbolism.
Well, maybe
I don't. My mind doesn't work that way.
Well, maybe from now.
But I wish it did.
Well, you know, you can ask them for some clarity. You can say, you know what, this symbolism stuff is real cute, but
but
I
it's
need
not getting
to
the
have
job
like
done.
Linear dialogue here. See if that helps.
I'm gonna try that.
Yeah, just say, you know, could you be literal for a change? Just try it. see if I get it then.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, good help. You never know. So, now,
as a sage, I need clear communication.
Yeah. I love symbolism. I think it's really, it's very helpful, especially when working through our preconceived ideas. I mean, we have a lot of prejudices built in and imprinting and like I said, preconceived notions, and symbolism can kind of bypass that. So it's not so much that they're being vague or that parts of our processing is vague. It's just that sometimes the symbols can work around our prejudices, our assumptions and presumptions. And
I agree. That was a really integral part of the Laura Day stuff.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. I mean, you really don't think about how much weight you place on certain things based on your preference or your just where you are at that moment.
Yeah, it really does help work around that. So it does have its place, definitely. But, you know, you can also ask for literal communication, so you can have that. But now going on, is assuming there are, you know, others beyond our dimension and beyond our realm, if you haven't had experiences, do you have a preference for how communication happens, like whether it's sensory, like do you want to feel it or see it, like poltergeistic activity, or
I don't want to see it,
or just energy work, or do you prefer intellectual connections with the information or verbal being communicated to you, or emotional? Do you like to be comforted and, you know, have more of a poetic connection? Do you guys have a preference?
Well, obviously, I want to hear clear, well thought out sentences. I want it to be intellectual.
Yes, Andy's already made up her mind. Well, I like that, too. I mean, that's why I enjoy the connection with Michael so much, because it's so, it is completely intellectual, and it's just right there, and, you know, there's no hemming and hawing and beating around the bush and this and that. It's just laid right out for you, and very matter-of-factly, which is what I love. But I can see how the inspirational and the emotional can also be helpful. I'm completely against the physical. I mean, I'm against it. I'm coming out against it. I have karma. I cannot handle it. No.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Karen, do you have a preference?
I'd like something, you know.
You'll take anything.
I'll just take whatever. But I think, you know, I mean, I have gut instincts. Like, I'll know things. But I'd like to have something that's more tangible. Like, I'd like to hear something or see something or feel something.
Okay.
The voices in your head are quiet.
Oh, I have my own voices in there. Don't shut up.
Oh,
there
you
go. There's probably no room for anyone else to talk. So.
Well, I think one of the reasons why a lot of us gravitate towards a channel is precisely for that reason. If it's a good channel, then you have your connection. You can have. It's not really that different from connecting yourself, and a lot of people, you know, they want to, just like you do, Karen. But it's also, you know, as long as you find a resonance with the channel and have your source, you know, it's not a failure on our individual parts if we can't connect on our own, or if we're not aware of how we're connecting. But especially if we prefer intellectual information, if you're really looking for that, you know, finding somebody who's formulating the information into, you know, a stream of words can that makes sense to you is good enough for a lot of people. I also really like the emotional stuff. I really love like the channeling from Pat Rodegast, who channels Emmanuel.
Oh yeah.
That information is verbal, but it's also very comforting. It's very inspiring. Are you familiar with Emmanuel?
I agree. I think I agree. I really enjoy that.
I've seen some of it, and I do get comfort from it, but I don't feel like I learn from it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Right.
Because it's not intellectual. It's just more of an embracing philosophy. It's very, I don't know, it's just comforting. Karen, are you familiar with Emmanuel?
A little bit, but I have to agree with Sandy. I don't really learn a lot from it. I don't need so much of the comforting.
Yeah.
I want my information. I want more specific. You know, I kind of like not having the flowery stuff with it.
Well, I don't like the flowery stuff, but I do like that's one of the things I like about Emmanuel, is that it may come across poetic, but it really gets straight to the heart of inspiration. And then I'm sure you guys are familiar with people providing energy work. Some of the channels, or some of the people I've heard having experience with the channels, really feel like tangible energy, the effects from the energy from it. Have you ever had that experience?
Not
poltergeistic, but, you know.
Well, I have had that experience with you and with Michael at different times. There's always a weird feeling I have when you channel that I'm aware of. I'm not exactly even positive what it is. I mean, I definitely feel a connection, and I feel an awareness of something different than I normally do. And also I have a tendency to feel an odd calmness, which I don't really have a specific, you know, it's not a specific thing. It's just it's like an overall general thing. And when I was in Raleigh and you were in New York and we would do online stuff with Whole Souls, there were times when there would be a lot of people involved near the beginning where we were trying, I guess everybody was trying to connect. I would get odd tingly head stuff. Like it was almost like a headache, but not really. Certain different times, and I had mentioned that, and it was always when things were very chaotic,
people,
and there was a lot of people involved.
Yeah, I was going to say people have reported having pressure or tingling or lots of stuff happening with their heads.
Yeah,
yeah.
You guys too.
Mm-hmm.
Overworked seventh chakra stuff or something.
Who's saying
Me, Karen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so you can feel that.
Yeah, no, I feel definitely when you're channeling or a lot of channeling, I get a little heaviness in the upper body, and I almost feel like I'm going to fall off a chair. You get like a little off center.
Oh.
Really weird feeling.
Yeah, I'm not used to that.
I feel ungrounded, and it just sort of throws me off.
I feel that way all the time. Maybe that's why I don't notice that.
So Sandy, what were you saying?
I get that. I've never had a tingling or anything like that, but I do get a slightly off balance feeling very often, especially at a live channeling session. When Michael is present in the room, I get a heavy feeling, is the best way to put it.
Now, do you guys, Karen, I think you may have more, I don't know if you're in situations where you're sitting in a room listening to someone talk a lot, like at a company meeting or something, I don't know, but is it different? Do you feel, because I've always wondered when people say, oh, I feel a pressure or I feel this tingling, is it very different from sitting in a room full of people just with someone talking, or is it distinctly different?
Oh, it's completely different.
Absolutely, totally different.
Yeah,
because it's my meeting. I mean, I don't feel. I feel like I usually do.
Oh. Okay.
Or I'm falling asleep because they're so boring.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
But in the channeling thing, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In fact, actually, when I'm in meetings, I usually, if there's a lot of people, I usually have to sit at the outside because it starts getting to me.
Oh.
Troy, we have a comment.
Okay.
From Geraldine.
Okay.
She was saying, when we were talking about comfort, she says that just knowing that there is more out there than the physical life is comforting.
Oh. Well, that we'll jump ahead to, we'll get to that in a second, but that's, I wanted to talk about that, so remind me if I don't get to it in time.
Well, we only have 4 minutes left before we get to the break. And
yeah, well, we're going to, it's flexible.
Oh, okay.
But beyond Michael, do you guys have other non-physical presences that act as your teacher or guide? Like I was mentioning Emmanuel, or there's Lazarus, or Oren and Dabin, or any other teachers like that are kind of high profile?
I've spent a lot of time with Seth.
Oh, yeah, Seth.
Yeah, I mean, we've read a lot of the Seth stuff together, you and I, but, I mean, I enjoy it, but it has a tendency to make me feel very tired after. It's like it's so much information, like it funneled through such a tiny hole in the top of my head or something, that it feels overwhelming, and then I have to digest it in small pieces because it seems very big.
Me too.
But I do enjoy the Seth stuff.
That's exactly what I would say, is that I read it and I enjoy it and it feels very valid, but at the same time it gives me unbearable headaches. Because
yeah.
It's just so hard to digest.
And Karen?
I didn't click with Seth at all.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just too much. It was like, tiring. You know, I like things more simplified.
Well, what about other ones? Do you guys have other ones that you do?
I've been drawn a little bit to Lazarus, because yeah. I've been studying crystals, and one of my teachers learned a lot about what, you know, he teaches with crystals through Lazarus.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I've told you about Barbara, my friend that channels Ariel.
Oh, okay.
I've gotten most of the information I have about the guys that come in and come out have come from her, Ariel. So that's always really interesting because, you know, there's always new ones coming in. And I mean, I'm assuming that we probably have a set of guides that stay with us from birth. But then other than that, some come in, some come out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
you do have.
I had master teachers that just came in and... So that's really interesting. So that's how I have to find out about them.
What experiences have you guys had with Michael that helps you validate that there is a presence beyond, that there's an actual valid presence happening beyond the consciousness of the channel? Not, you know, because even I, I'm doing the channeling, I'm still, you know, completely open to the possibility that it's just some creative part of my brain that I've accessed, and if there's synchronicity between me and another channel, maybe it's even, you know, just all of us tapping into some collective consciousness. But I don't, you know, I still question whether it's actually a separate consciousness. What helps you guys to differentiate?
I think the most important and the easiest way, I mean, besides the fact that I think it would be really complicated to completely change your speech pattern and the energy and the feel of you in general. But if Michael was on board with you all the time, I might be more skeptical. However,
oh.
That's not the case. And Michael is clear to point out things that you do that I know that you're inside going, wait a minute. So, or even things like animal rights, things that you're so passionate about. And Michael has, even though he's like not against it, but he doesn't have that, he doesn't say, you know, if he would come out and say, well, that's wrong, you know, or be more sort of on the same wavelength as you on, because those are things that are core to who you are.
I see.
Would be very difficult, I think, for a part of you to say, you know, that's just choice.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, because you would never say that.
My mind would be, yeah, that's just choice. A stupid choice.
Yeah, that's right. A mean choice. You know, I mean,
an awful choice.
That's right. The wrong choice.
The wrong choice, yeah.
So I just can't, that's the reason that it's so, for me, you know, it's such a, so obvious. And even like, you know, things that have happened recently where Michael, where we've had issues and Michael has said, well, you know, he's been able to almost sort of soothe things over in a way that we couldn't.
Because of their objectivity.
Because, being objective, that there's no way a personality can really be that objective when they are so in the middle of it.
Okay.
No matter how, you know, amazingly enlightened you might be.
So for you, part of the validation is the contrast between the consciousness coming through and the channel that you got to know. Okay, and Sandy or Karen? And it doesn't have to be talking about...
Well, you know what, I said almost the same thing last week, I think, about the difference between you and Michael being so...
All right.
Dressed.
Here we go.
So I'm there too. Catherine had a comment on that. She says that it is the nature of the specificity of some of the comments that they have made that provides an external validation. And I find that to be true also. I've been told things by Michael that there's no way in hell that you could have known.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. That happened to me, too.
And to me, that just makes it very, very, very obvious that it's coming from somewhere.
And Karen?
Yeah, I agree. It's a detail. It's a subtle thing. Like, when information comes through, it's like, yeah. You know, you just know that it's definitely for real. And also, I've had, you know, information given by Michael and also something similar coming from another channel, or from another Michael channel. So I've had... you know, similar information come in from different sources so that I know that it's definitely...
Oh, so you're able to cross-referencing...
Yeah, I've had similar things being said by different, from different sources.
That's one of the things I've always... That's one of the reasons why I've stuck with the work I do, too, is at least it used to be able to be cross-referenced a lot more, and it was incredible. In fact, there was a period of time where the various different channels who were channeling Michael were sent out a question, and I'd like to start this again too, but a question was posed to Michael through those various channels, and then all of the responses were published together so that everybody could sense the validation and the core of the information, but also get a sense of the different styles or angles that it was approached, but it was all consistent. It was amazing.
I never heard of that. That would be so cool.
Yeah, I would like to start doing that again. So look forward to that.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, a panel of channels. Unfortunately, I've been ostracized from most of them, but, you know, there's a few that might want to work with it. But moving on, there seems to be a growth in, you know, television portraying spirits and hauntings and mediums, and what do you guys think about that? Do you think it's just kind of gone the way of sensationalism, or do you think there's, you know, some valid portrayals out there at all?
Well, I think that it's an interest of a lot of people, even like us, you know. I mean, it's something that's kind of a part of our lives in a way, and I mean, we have connection with a non-physical presence on a regular basis. So it'd be something that would be interesting to us. However, it's just like anything else. They cut out and put in what they want to make it look a certain way, and it's very sensationalized, but it doesn't stop us from watching.
Oh, so you like it. Okay.
But more for fun than, you know, anything
else. Yeah, because
else.
I think when it's portrayed the way it really is, it can be pretty boring for TV.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you know, I love it.
Yeah, I mean,
I watch
I mean,
every single one of them that's out there. I find it. I love it. I even DVR Montel Williams and Wednesdays with Sylvia Brown.
I watch
even
that
though
too,
I have, you know,
even though I can't stand
you know,
that,
even though
I
mixed
watch
feelings
it
about Sylvia Brown.
Yeah.
But I really think it has, I really think it's interesting that all of this, I mean, you have all these TV shows that kind of deal with the dead and the paranormal and mediumship and all that. And we're also moving into the mature soul way of being in America. And it just, it has to facilitate it somehow. I mean, just you think about it, you know, mainstream religion, you know, teaches you that, you know, there is no, like, there's either go to heaven or hell, and, whoever, you know, whatever you're brought up with, you have these kind of firm ideas of what you were told, what's going to happen to you when you die. And then all of a sudden, there's all this stuff saying, well, you know, there is a consciousness, you are going to be okay, they're still there. And I really think just even learning that and accepting that can open up people to so much other things.
Yeah,
I really think it really leads us into to maturity.
I think so, too, and I think Michael has talked about this in the past, where a lot of what we see on TV is sort of mature soul concepts presented through the young soul medium,
mm-hmm.
so that there's a bridge, so that, you know, it's all sensationalized and exciting and entertaining, but the concepts are still being planted. The concepts are still there that, you know, you can create, you define your own spirituality, you do exist beyond here, and there's no heaven or hell. There's just consciousness and experience. And that seems to be getting through more and more, but even if it's, you know, on a corny reality TV show.
No, but even like for Sylvia Brown, for example, you know, that's a very, I would say Montel probably has a pretty strong young soul audience.
Yeah.
You know, that watches that. And, you know, but her books, and she, you know, she's like written a million books.
Yeah.
And she has one that pretty much says, you know, there is no devil. You know, there is no demons. You know, Jesus, it's a loving God. It's, you know, whatever, you know, you're really, you know, they're all the same and it's all loving. But she really promotes some positive ideas to people.
Yeah, she does. That's,
you know,
the one side
or not
of her I appreciate. That's the side of her I really appreciate, because she's, I don't know how some of her tactics in conveying information are pretty shocking, and I don't know how anybody could feel comfortable being so conclusive, but the teachings that she brings on a spiritual, you know, as a spirituality have been something that's been missing for a long time. So I appreciate that part. Does the concept of the other side scare you guys in any way? Like just the fact that it may be existing all around you, just to skew or anything like that?
Well, actually, it doesn't scare me as long as it's not reaching out to touch me. So... because I will be very brief, but Michael has said in the past that I have karma from the astral plane, because apparently I'm a big fan of doing things like, you know, being, you know, between lives.
Haunting. You like to
haunting.
Haunt.
Yeah, I like to haunt. And so I've created karma. And because I am aware that can happen, that things can be moved and things can be, you know, and you can mess with people, and that I have this karma, I am, like, really nervous about it all the time.
God.
Like, people who want a Ouija, people want to, like, you know, table tip, I'm like, no, no, I don't want any of that nonsense.
Oh, I can't wait to be a ghost.
Yes, well, just be careful of the karma you create.
Well, I will tell you, even though I've had all these experiences with the other side or whatever you want to call it, when I've had physical phenomena happen, it is unnerving. It's really disturbing.
It is.
When water faucets turn on and doors unlock, and I'm talking chains on the door, whenever I've had that kind of presence, I used to have this old couple hanging around my apartment on 14th Street when I first moved to New York City, and my friends would all sort of, you know, everybody always humors me, whether they believe in what I do or not. They're very considerate and very respectful. But when I told them I had, you know, there were spirits that were there that were tangible, I would just say, well, just stay here long enough and you'll see. And I would be able to, within an hour or two, there would be a phenomena that would happen. And it's books flying off a shelf, or I would lock the door. For some reason, they like to unlock the door, like the chain on the door. And I would lock it, and everybody would sit down, and I'd say, just give it a little while. And sooner or later, you'd hear, like, ching, and the chain would come unlocked. It would be undone, swinging. So it's disturbing.
It's a good thing I didn't meet you then, because I would have never hung around you.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of cool to me.
It is really cool, but it is disturbing when you're alone. Like, when I was saying, well, there really are, they do, there's something going on, and just sit here long enough and you'll see, that was impressive and it was very exciting, but then when everybody would leave, and you're there alone and a bookshelf falls over on you, it's not so, you're like, what the hell?
I feel slightly like I'm going to be sick. Story was very upsetting.
So I had a talk with them, and I said, you guys got it, you can hang around, but no more of that. And it seems to be the case that you can really communicate clearly to them, however, even if it's just talking out loud, to get those points across and clear up your space or own it again. But I liked it. I did like the idea of adopting a ghost.
See, seeing things, like I've seen, where you feel or feeling something being somewhere, is not really that stressful for me. It's when I think stuff is going to happen. That's the anxiety.
Oh,
the
just the
physical.
Anxiety of it waiting for it.
It's the physical stress of something happening that's too much for me. But, like, there's a weird thing that I see on the stairs here all the time. It's a guy in a white shirt and black pants coming down the stairs. And Johnny has seen it, and I've seen it. And, it's just a repetitive thing. But I don't feel any anxiety about it at all.
By an imprint.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Have a waiter
I thought,
living with you.
He's not doing a very good job. I assumed it was my feeling. Didn't feel like there was a lot of anything big around it, It just felt like it was an imprint of something that had happened habitually or repeatedly, and then it was just kind of there in time because it's always exactly the same.
Well, we have gone long in our discussion, and I do want to make sure we get the channeling in here and some callers to call in. There's at least one person on hold, so if you're listening, hang in there. But I did want to go over a couple of things before I go into trance. And, well, the first one, and we'll just be brief, but are you convinced? I mean, do you unquestioningly feel that we exist beyond this form of consciousness? I mean, do you think that we exist past this body?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I definitely do. I wouldn't say unquestioningly, but I would. You'd be like 98%. You know what I mean? There's always that margin of, well, even if we don't, it certainly was entertaining. But I definitely think we do.
Sandy?
Very definitely.
And Karen said absolutely.
Yep.
I would say I'm 90% sure, yeah. And does this help you guys not fear death? Or does it have any impact at all? Or are they separate things?
Well, I always say that I don't, because I really, like, consciously am thinking I don't, but I'm sure that my actual physical body is not looking forward to that moment, and there are those built-in, need to survival, instinctual things, but I think that I probably, I don't think I fear it as much as the concept of missing this personality and this body.
You guys, Sandy? Karen.
I feel so certain that death on this plane is the beginning of something different that no, I don't have any reluctance or fear at all. I'm just a tremendous amount of curiosity to know more about what it's really going to be like.
Karen?
I think I don't fear death. I think I probably fear the process of dying. And I just rather have, like, a piano dropped on me than, like, some sort of long, lingering illness.
Yeah.
It's more like the whole process of it that I kind of hope is not
painful.
Be drawn out or dramatic.
Yeah. Well, as you guys know, I almost died recently in 2007, and I thought I was totally fine with it until I was almost dying. And when I was almost dying, I was like, good God, no. It was claustrophobic. I felt pure panic and terror. I would have never thought that I would feel that way.
But don't you think that's the instinctual survival of your body?
Well, now I've had time to think about it. I think it was not only that, but also that it wasn't time to go, so it was like the part of me kicking in to make sure that I wasn't. Because I really believe that if I had said, okay, I guess my time is up, then I would have died. I think I would not have survived all that if I didn't fight. And so I think that that's part of what the terror. Terror is a real good motivator. Sometimes.
I agree.
So that was my experience. But I don't, you know, intellectually I don't fear it at all. I'm very curious. But I was really terrified. I was terrified that I would just not exist anymore. And that it was amazing. It was amazing to be confronted with that. So really quickly, what do you think, just if you could synopsize, or you probably can't, not effectively, but what do you think is the most powerful or empowering thing you've learned from having access to channeling or the dead or spirit guides, or, and assuming it's all valid information, what do you think is the most powerful thing you've gained?
That is a really large question.
Is it bigger than what I...
but I guess more of a sense of not being alone, more of a sense of community and unity in the universe, and that everything is going to be okay, and that it is all choice. And the fact that I participate in my life, but my life is still a part of participating in the universe, I think, is the biggest. I don't think I looked at it that way prior to that.
Okay.
As opposed to just being one little person moving through their life, you know, feeling like you only affect you and who you see and who's around you. I now feel that my effect is more of a ripple through the universe. I feel more powerful, more important, if you will.
More responsible, too.
Yeah, more responsible.
It's Sandy, Karen.
I feel like I've learned how connected I am to all other energy and to all other life. And just being aware that I'm a part of life and life is a part of me, I think is what makes it so easy to not be afraid of the next step.
Okay. And Karen?
I think I want to add that what amazed me is just the idea of how much freedom we have as a soul or as an essence. There's no script, there's no rules really, you know, it's all there, it's all choice, and, you know, we just kind of have to deal with whatever choices we make, but we can go anywhere, move anywhere.
And take as long as we want.
There's no sense of time. That really blows my mind.
Yeah, I really like that. That was very liberating to have that concept taught to us from Michael, that there's nobody on the other side waiting to ask you if you were Episcopalian. I love that quote. Okay, so before I go into trance, I wanted to share just this piece that recently I put on the list based on Karen's question. I found this, and since we're talking about the other side, this is about hauntings, but I really found this to be interesting that Michael differentiated all these different, you know, quote-unquote hauntings. So I wanted to share those, and then I'll go into trance, and we'll figure out how to divide up the time so that we have a panel with Michael and some calls. But Michael calls one kind of haunting a beacon haunting, and they say this is where a fragment, and in the Michael teachings that means a person, you know, just a piece of, it's just the word they use to refer to a soul. A fragment has left a portion of consciousness in time and space so as to complete a simple yet vital process of integration. So I suppose it's like a piece of you left behind to process maybe the grief of dying. And then there are living hauntings. And Michael says, this is another scenario, is when a fragment's personality has not realized or accepted death, remaining locked in an echo of itself for no other reason but as an attachment to the life just lived. Essence usually leaves that portion of consciousness behind, knowing it is perfectly capable of integrating it later. This allows for complete freedom of the personality even beyond death. This kind of haunting is not usually marked by a pattern, but by apparent randomness and lifelike expressions as that personality continues to live within a familiar environment. These ghosts are the most conscious and capable of communicating intelligently with the living. Most do not, however, and remain living perfectly believable lives just slightly askew from the frequency you would call physical reality. This is more common than can currently be comprehended.
Oh, my God.
That's a little interesting. Those are the ones I've had a lot. I've seen a lot over my course of living. And then there are reality burns. They call it reality burns. Some hauntings are the emotional echoes or burns of fragments who are actually still alive. Some fragments have such a dynamic or disturbed or passionate infusion into reality that some of their energy remains behind as a kind of or a form of haunting. These hauntings usually diffuse when that fragment dies or when the emotional energy behind the haunting is resolved or processed. Some of the scarier hauntings can be explained as this type, as the anger of one fragment is left behind, affecting the next fragment, whose fear is then added to the burns in reality. Quite often, a designated space is declared as spooky or haunted, drawing expectancy among those who are within its vicinity. If anything startling happens, a burst of energy is added to the collective energy within that space that then becomes a part of the haunting itself. These hauntings can easily be cleansed from the reality into which they have been burned.
I bet that's what happened at Casa Grande, as I recall.
Yeah, we've had that too, where we move into an apartment and you can just feel the reality burns from the people who had lived there before. And you just do a clearing of the space, and it's pretty easy. And then the last one is generated haunting. And this is more of an extension of the reality burn than it is a category unto itself, but we describe it separately because its origins and sustenance are dependent on stories that nurture its presence. This haunting is the result of people telling stories about a certain environment and then contributing to the energy required to minimally support the stories. These hauntings are rarely able to be substantiated, but are the subject of fun, spooky experiences that contribute to the energy that is the haunting. Bed and breakfast, restaurants, landmarks, and other tourist locations that claim hauntings are a prime example of this. You guys think you've experienced any of these?
No.
If you were paying attention, if you maybe you fell asleep while I was reading.
Well, yeah, just like that when we were living in Arizona, that apartment, our very first apartment where we lived together, I thought, oh, my God, living with him is very scary.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot going on in that apartment when we first moved in.
Yeah, there was. Well, I guess, so because we got about 28 minutes left in the show, I'm going to segue into the channeling part. And so there's going to be a little song played, and it'll be about 5 minutes. So you guys can take a little break and then when we return, I'll be in a trance, and you guys can ask whatever questions you want of Michael about this topic. And do you even have any questions? Do you guys have anything you want to discuss with them?
I could come up with a few if we need it.
Well,
Karen is always there for us.
because if not, then we'll just go ahead and start taking the callers, too, or kind of mixing it in.
Yeah,
so
let's just mix it up a little.
Oh, let's mix it up a little. That sounds great.
Are you making fun of me?
So let me get into a trance, and then we'll take a couple of Karen's questions first, and then we'll bring in the callers. And Cypress, you will be co-hosting with me, so you can welcome the callers.
I haven't forgotten.
That'll be wonderful. So thank you, guys. That was a really fun discussion.
It was.
Yeah. It was indeed.
Okay, so I'll talk to you guys after this segment's over.
Maybe meeting.
Okay. We are here, and hello to each of you.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
We understand we will be discussing with you the concept of what you refer to as spirit and connecting to what you refer to as the other side. We believe we can offer some insight into this, and we will take your questions however you choose to present them.
Well, go ahead, Karen. Karen?
Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, where's my question? Okay, my question was kind of elaborating on what we were just talking about, Michael's initial channeling about ghosts and hauntings and beacons and so on. When he mentioned that there's different haunting scenarios, like sighting, smell, sounds, and then that moving objects, vocalizations, terror, or something else. And I'd like him to elaborate on what exactly that phenomenon comes from.
As with the concept of hauntings, there are also different scenarios that motivate what might be considered under the umbrella of poltergeistic activity. For the most part, what ends up being poltergeistic or tangible activity is based on the emotional processing of a particular individual within a specific space. This emotional processing quite often is drawing an energy into space that is more complicated for the individual to process than was expected. And rather than finding new ways of processing the energy, the emotional energy, it can tend to come out through the environment in forms of tangible physical phenomena that seems to be sourced from non-physical sources. This is quite common in the lives of certain disturbed teenagers or disturbed individuals in general. And this even itself can break down into two categories. One would be motivated by the individual itself with the emotional energy literally reaching out beyond the physical that you recognize as physical and affecting the environment. However, there is another angle that can be approached by having guides or hired help, so to speak, to help burn off that energy by providing the hostile activity or poltergeistic activity for that individual who is emotionally processing. So it can be motivated individually or brought into being through help, through guides. And this is usually over when the emotional processing is done with the individual. Other poltergeistic activity is exactly what you think it is. It is the capability of a non-physical presence to make itself known in the physical through some means. This is usually done through a form of concentrated energy in the same way that the teenager, for instance, has such an emotional surge of energy that it affects physical environment beyond the body. The same can occur from fragments who are non-physical with enough emotional concentrated energy to affect an environment. And once that has been locked onto, that capability has been locked onto by a fragment who is in between lives, it's not that complicated to continue, but it usually means that that particular fragment is, once it locks onto, for instance, the capability of throwing a book off a shelf, it will just continue to do this. It's not something that can spread throughout the space and find the capabilities expanding. Usually, once a capability has been focused on, it is repeated over and over again. And we believe that in all instances that have been recorded or validated, this is the case. It's a repetitive activity. And again, all of this is sourced from emotional turbulence, if you will.
Okay. Karen, did that answer your question?
Oh, you know, I could elaborate on it, of course. So we'll say, you know, we were having discussions beforehand about, you know, a particular TV show where there's a demon that shows up. Now, you've already taught us that there's no such thing as demons. But whatever is going on in this particular TV show, this demon keeps showing up as a poltergeist, seems to follow the main, the head character or whatever in the show. So what could come across as it being a demon? Could it be, like you just explained, you know, this person's own energy manifesting, or is it something, a playful spirit that's just messing with him? What could do this?
Yes, it falls into the same categories that we just described, where the individual has unresolved emotional energy, and once that emotional energy has been held to the side long enough, depending on the individual's personality traits and soul age, it can become its own consciousness. Not literally, but it will play its role as a separate entity from the fragment who is experiencing it. And this would be a way of helping that. This would be a method that an individual might choose to process the unresolved emotional energy. So a demon for many fragments is simply emotional elements of their own life that have been unresolved and manifest or in some form of personification, and then the battle or the exercising is a way of resolving it. Often it is not actually resolved. It is simply suppressed or removed for dealing with later at another time within the life or another lifetime altogether. But it is generated from the emotional turbulence. However, as we said in our first explanation, it can also be that the fragment, for lack of a better phrase, hires help for playing these roles. And so infant souls or baby souls or young souls or any soul age can play the role of the demon for the fragment who believes that a demon is present and will play it fairly well. Demons, by definition, do not exist, not that we have seen at least. But there are mischievous fragments. There are individual personalities that continue beyond the physical plane in a way that were very similar to their presence while physical, and they can be difficult and challenging and negative in presence. And they will happily use any portal through a fragment who has these emotional disturbances as doorways, play the role of demon or play the role of something hostile and play it very well as their own form of processing their emotional turbulence. So it does happen from two different angles, generated by the individual and personified, or personified but still having an actual independent consciousness play the role for that fragment. Does this answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is Sandy. Do we have any questions from the chat room?
No, I don't have anything showing up in the chat room. Wasn't there somebody on?
Do we have a caller?
Yes, we will take the calls.
Hey, this is Troy. I'm still in a trance, but I pre-recorded this so I could let you know you're listening to Troy and Michael speak live. And Cypress is going to take your calls now and direct your questions to Michael, 646-652-4762. The number again is 646-652-4762. Have a great time.
Hello?
Hi, Cypress.
Hi.
This is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Do I just go ahead and say my question?
Yes, just go ahead. You're on the air right now.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
My question actually goes back to the earlier part of what we were talking about, channeling itself. there's a lot of different types of channeling experiences. And I was just wondering if Michael could elaborate on what determines how a channel may receive information. I know some receive information emotionally, some by words themselves, some as visions, and some even seem to get like a mass download of information and then they interpret it and bring it forward. Some even do all of these. I was just wondering, what is it that will determine what type of information a channel will get, and is it something that develops or evolves over time?
As with all designs of the personality, there are inherent strengths that come from that design, although we would like to clarify and add that this is not a limitation. It is simply an inherent design that can be balanced or have the areas that aren't as strong be strengthened. But those who find their overleaves on particular axes, on a particular axis, will find that they have a more natural default strength in contacting what might be called the other side. For instance, those who have high action-oriented overleaves may find themselves needing tangible connection, something that is physical. And this can be energy work, that is known as energy work, or it can be actually having to access the other side through physical means, such as contacting other channels. The inspirational axis usually has the capability of gathering information through the intellect, through verbal, through information, getting actual sentences and formulated communication that can be translated in some way. The emotional expressive axis can tend to have the experience of feeling more, experiencing the sensations of comfort, the sensations of presence, but not necessarily having an actual formulated structure to this. And of course, the assimilative axis, the neutral axis, may access through whatever means may be highlighted through other overleaves or preferences. This is a very simplified response to your question, but it is the base from which to explore this. And if you are speaking of actual channels, this is relevant. If you are speaking about the experience of an individual, it is also relevant to some extent. Did this help answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine. Do we have any other callers?
I have a question from the chat room.
Oh, Sandy has a question. This will have to be our last question.
This is from Geraldine. And she was going back to the talk about demons, and what she wanted to know is that if all is choice, do the fragments who are producing these demons, is this part of an agreement?
Most definitely. There are no fragments who can be interfered with in a non-physical way or from a non-physical realm without there being some sort of conscious invitation. And when we say conscious in this case, we mean that there is an element of disturbance that is seeking some form of outlet. And in that seeking, it can often throw out a net, so to speak, for any kind of outlet. But it is not something that is imposed upon an individual. In other words, there are no such things as possession. There are no such things as hauntings, in a sense, where the fragments are attacked against their will. There is usually some form of agreement for the experience. Although we can also add to this that there are elements of karma that can be involved that do reach between the physical and the non-physical, such as the fragment known as Cyprus has had in her past, and all of you have had, whereas you have in some way invited presence, consciousness from the other side into your space, which then affected your space in a way that terrified you, causing, and even though this was agreed upon, the reaction created an intensity or a karmic ribbon that will then be balanced by your providing the same experiences for another, or for the fragments who had provided it for you. And in this case, it can feel as if it's imposed upon you, or it can feel as if it is an attack, but it is simply a balancing of the energy that was created from the initial invitation, or experimentation, we should clarify.
Well, it's 25 after, so I think we're going to have to have our little on ending. So if we could all say thank you to Michael, and we could bring Troy back in for the goodbyes, that would be great. So thank you, Michael, for your time or
Michael,
attention.
Thank you, Michael.
Good day to you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey gang, this is Troy. Give me a minute to come out of trance, and I'll be back in a second.
Before cultivation of Christmas trees, they were down on their knees in the wood, inspecting the trunk for good acting potential, and that's how they knew if they could. That's how they knew if they could. It's almost, almost Christmas. You might, maybe you could break a heart or two now, and I think you should. I think you should. Before mass production of fireplace stockings, families would make them from scratch, with patches and old scraps of blankets and clothing. It really didn't matter if they matched. It really didn't matter if they matched. It's almost, almost Christmas. You might, maybe you could break a heart.
A couple of minutes left, but thank you guys, and I'm really sorry. I think that that some of the channeling got mixed up. I think I'll have to look into this, but
the inspiration and the expression access.
So just to be clear, I think it was supposed to be that the sensations came through the inspiration and
the verbal comes through the
expressive. I think so. I just got this, you know, glitch in the information. I just knew that I didn't have a chance to alter that. But I wanted to address that. See, that's an example of bad channeling.
The wires just got crossed a little bit.
There you go. Yeah,
well, we should definitely thank Catherine and Geraldine for being a part of this as well.
Yes, thank you for calling. Thank you, Geraldine.
Wonderful question, Catherine.
And comments, those were great. And thank you guys for being a part of the show. And like we said at the beginning, before we got on the air, all of December is an experiment. So we'll just keep improving the best we can and be more informative. But for now, this is good practice. And I appreciate everybody who's listening.
And it was fun. It was a really good
topic. Thought it was a great show.
So we're about to go off the air, so if anybody's interested, go to truthloveenergy.com for more information, and register at Blog Talk Radio so you can leave comments about the show and make it one of your favorites. Woohoo! And thank you guys.
Certainly.
We'll end the show here.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Karen. Bye, Sandy.
Bye.
See you next week.